Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Social media can be a really positive tool. I felt like I lacked male role models growing up. No one was showing me that men could be these things, kind, compassionate, loving. So one of my drivers is to try and enter that space as a man who can still be masculine, to still look masculine, to still have a lot of masculine energy.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Hello and welcome to It's Complicated, the podcast to help you untangle your relationship with your phone. Left our hearts in the lost and found. I'm Tanya Gooden, and each week I'll be talking to my guests about how they manage the relationship with the tiny tyrant in their pocket. We'll be talking about how our phone habits affect our work, our lives, and our loves, and about what our relationship with our phone might just tell us about our relationship with ourselves. If you want help and you want hope, you've come to the right place. This is It's Complicated. My guest this week is the Naked Professor, Ben Bidwell. Ben is a mindset and purpose coach, writer and public speaker who launched his blog, The Naked Professor, where he articulates the importance of mental health and personal development by stripping away the masks of masculinity and embracing his authentic persona in a vulnerable and captivating way. Ben's heartfelt message has seen him write for The Independent and Men's Health magazine and appear on Sky News, This Morning, Talk Radio and Heart. In doing so, he's leading the revolution, encouraging men to open up and connect more with their emotions while still retaining their sense of masculinity. So, I'm going to kick off with the most important question, which is, when did you start taking your clothes off in public?
Absolutely. It's a very good question. It's a very fair one. Probably about 3 years ago. And I had the vision that I wanted to create this blog, and I knew I'd already started writing, was going to be very vulnerable and open and focused on kind of creating your own path and not doing the normal thing and all that. And then I had the idea to take my clothes off to embody the message.
And can you remember the first time you did it and where you were?
The very first time, I actually really can't the very first time, which is funny, isn't it? Oh, actually I can. I went into Richmond Park with a friend to get some sort of test shots. It was hysterical. It was a really very funny afternoon. And we got a few, and then I thought I really have to work with a very professional photographer to get this done, because if it's not professional, then it loses impact. So I found a professional photographer who I knew, and then we started going to really iconic places. And I remember the first time we got one by Big Ben, and we captured this very still moment, and it was like, oh, that's quite special, actually. Mm. There's something in that. And then we had a period of sort of 6 months where we went out and got lots.
And, yeah, I mean, the shots are amazing on your blog or on your Insta feed. They look gorgeous. I always wonder when I look at them, though. I mean, do you do them when there's no one around, or do you ever get any problems with people saying, what are you doing?
It's always, I mean, quite often it's sort of 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
In the summer, that we've actually started at 4:30 when the sun comes up. And there is a little quiet patch probably between the sort of 4 and 6 in the morning, especially on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
When London sleeps, you get a few people coming out of the clubs. So we've had a few experiences of, you know, waiting for people to kind of move on a little bit. We've had one experience in a park when I didn't realise, but there was a deer cull going on. And horrible. And we had access directly to the park through my photographer's house. So we went straight out the back door without needing to go through the main gates, which were obviously locked. And then the Land Rover came around with the guy, and sort of I peered in his visor, apparently. Not naked, I'm pleased to say, because that would have been an interesting way to go.
Short.
Takes some explaining.
Short during a deer
call. Yes. So, yeah, but we explained that one. He actually called the police because he said, you're trespassing. And I was just glad I had my clothes on. I was like, you don't know the half of it. You know, this could be so much worse. But we explained that we lived in the house and that's fine. But other than that, we've had no difficulties, really. It's all been very plain sailing.
And I was reading a bit about your story, and you worked in the tech industry, didn't you?
Yeah.
And which is interesting because obviously my blog is all about our relationship with tech. And I'm coming across a lot of people who have either left the tech industry or through burnout or, you know, mental health issues, or who have, you know, kind of done a real U-turn on how they're working. I wonder if you can just take us through a little bit about kind of where you were and how you ended up taking your clothes off in Richmond Park.
There is actually a direct link, I'd say. I mean, I really struggled in working in my tech company. I founded it because I'm non-technical. I had a tech partner, and I just found myself increasingly reliant. It felt like my life, the vision that I had for my life and building this company, was in the hands of someone else. And no matter how hard I tried or how hard I was working, I couldn't impact that tech. I couldn't build it myself. So I felt like my life was in someone else's hands. And it was going through those emotions and feeling quite anxious about where my life was going that I decided I needed something about me that I could control. So that's when I started my blog. I started writing about what my passions were, which were mental health and the growth that I'd been through. And
but you weren't the Naked Professor then?
I was a no one. I just was writing and then decided to make it public and just who knows what will happen.
Yeah.
And the moment I launched my blog, every day since, my blogs got more and more interesting and the tech company got less and less. And within about a year of launching my blog, the tech company was folded and everything was going on my blog. So yeah, it was just driven fundamentally by a passion to be able to steer my life in the direction that I wanted to without needing other people's input, because that I found that challenging.
I really particularly wanted to talk to you about what you do in men's mental health, because I'm aware when I'm doing any interviews or kind of looking at what's going on online in our relationship with tech, that there seems to be, quite rightly, a lot of focus on women and the issues they have around social media. But I kind of feel that the story, the struggles that men have and how social media might impact mental health is a bit of an untold story and slightly neglected. I just wanted to tell you one thing, which was I was doing a talk at a boys' school recently, so I do lots of talks in schools. And beforehand, I thought I would just have a look, log into Instagram, which was the app they were using the most apart from YouTube, with the profile of a, you know, 14-year-old boy, just, you know, that kind of age of date of birth, just to see what kind of stuff, you know, would come up. And almost immediately, I got an ad for an app called Manly. I don't know if you've come across Manly.
I've seen the adverts, yeah.
It was all about airbrushing your shots with abs and, you know, kind of improving your muscles. Mm. And I'd seen this before I went into the talk. And then I had so many of these 13 and 14-year-old boys talking to me about, you know, when I look online, I see all these six-packs. I see these, you know, guys with amazing bodies. How can I be like that? So tell me, you know, your experience of kind of dealing with people around particularly social media and how that affects men.
I think no doubt it does impact men, but men probably is more bravado. We won't say that we're jealous of someone else, but secretly underneath we're probably looking going, God, I wish I had that guy's body, or he's in great shape, why can't I be like that? So I think there probably is a lot going on. I mean, from my perspective, before social media was going on, when I grew up in the 80s, I was born in 81, you know, what I was looking around at was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. You know, they were showing me the epitome of masculinity, and they were showing me that I needed to be big, strong, tough, brave, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And no one told me or no one showed me on social media, but that was just what I was picking up from society. So the challenge for me in terms of male mental health is that I felt I had to put a mask on and I had to man up.
Mm. It's the toxic masculinity, isn't it?
A little bit. And it's harsh to call Sylvester Stallone or Arnie toxic. They are very actually emotional men as well. You get the sense. But yeah, it was that toxic sense that to be a man, I had to be tough, strong, brave, get the girls. And you know, that was masculinity at a successful level. And that was what I was aspiring to be. And that meant I had to put a mask on and I had to shut down my emotions, shut down my kindness and compassion and empathy that I naturally felt. My mum's a nurse and I really saw that in her and loved that in her. But that wasn't lad points. You know, that wasn't setting me up to be a successful male. So I had to put on that mask, and that hurt in a different way. And I think it also hurt in a way of being inauthentic. You know, any time we're not being ourselves and we're trying to be someone else, it's draining and it hurts.
There still are very few men like you online, or I was going to say offline as well, who are kind of saying we need to talk about male mental health. I mean, do you
bearing
think
all.
Yeah, bearing all. Do you think that will change? Are you seeing a bit more of a, you know, you've been doing it for a few years, are you seeing a bit more of a kind of movement?
I am, but I'm in a bubble, and you attract what you attract, don't you? And, and I'm meeting a load of amazing men, and it's incredible, and I feel very lucky from that. Now, it's very hard to see from an outsider's perspective. If I wasn't doing what I do, would I be seeing a change? I felt like I lacked male role models growing up. No one was showing me that men could be these things. So one of my drivers is to try and enter that space as a man who can still be masculine, to still look masculine, to still have a lot of masculine energy and represent that, but also show that alongside it, you can be kind, compassionate, loving, you know, tell your mum you love her, be in a deeply loving relationship where you are incredibly connected to your wife and she's a huge part of your world and your kids and all that kind of stuff, but still go and play football with the boys or play, you know, whatever sport it is and hit the gym and use some of that energy. There can be a balance. I think what I was shown at a young age is that it was all or nothing and you were either a proper man and there wasn't space for that stuff. So
To have both sides.
And I think that's where we've gone wrong. We've put all our eggs in one basket, and I'd like to, now my aim is to try and represent a new breed of man who can be both, because I don't want to repel the alpha men and for them to go, yeah, but he's just not like me. I want to be like, hey, I get it, but and I get where you're coming from, and there's some natural masculine energy there, but it's okay, you can still be kind and compassionate and loving, we can still be connected at a deep level to people. That's what I hope we can get to.
So how do you feel about the fact that a lot of people think that social media is causing a lot of the problems? Actually, if we didn't have social media, maybe we wouldn't have these. I mean, I know you talked about, you know, a world before that where you had the male role models that were still, you know, you were still kind of wanting to emulate them. But do you think having access, like women have talked about, to just 24/7 images of, you know, amazing fit guys in very, you know, successful masculine environments, do you think that's just not helping?
I think, yeah, you're right, it's escalating. But I think there would still be challenge without it, but it just escalates it, and we're constantly playing a comparison game, aren't we? We're constantly looking. The way I see it is that we're so many of us, particularly in this country, in London, we've got so many opportunities. Let's say we're in the 99.99% most fortunate people in the world with the opportunity we've got, but we love focusing on the 99.999. You know, they've got that little bit more, and I want to be like them. And No, I think very much if we're going to play the comparison game, can we start to learn how lucky we are and look down and how much more we've got than everyone else? But social media puts this dream perspective or gives us this dream life in front of us, and we all want more. For me, that fundamentally, it's about getting people to live more in their heart. It's teaching men that live in their heart, because our heart doesn't compare. Our heart isn't in competition with everyone else. Our heart just wants to be connected and to live our own, run our own race and be unique and authentic. So I think it's our ego, when we're caught up in our ego, that's constantly comparing and everything else. So for me, yeah, it's education and showing men that emotions can be really powerful and to connect deeply with people and live more in that space and less, I wish I could be like him.
So there's a lot of trolling and stalking and, you know, problems that anyone who's got any kind of profile online suffers from. Have you had that? Have you had people kind of attack you as a result of the message that you're trying to give?
Not really. I'm very lucky. I mean, I've had a few little comments, but nothing really. No, I haven't. And I'm lucky. And I'm sure maybe it'll come. Who knows? I don't know. But maybe I'm going to invite it now, but I really don't see it as a problem. I think that the people who do share those, the problem comes with them.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones crying out for help. I like the analogy that if you're holding a cup of tea, a full cup of tea, and you poke the cup of tea, then tea comes out. Whereas if you hold a cup of water and you poke the water, it's water comes out. So when they're showing so much anger, it's the anger that's inside of them. It's their issue. You know, I think I'm very comfortable that what I'm doing comes from a good place. And my message is, an authentic one that means well. And if people see it otherwise, then that's not representation of me. It's where they're at. So
where do men go for help, either online or offline? How do you know, if anyone's listening to this podcast thinking, actually, I am really struggling with, you know, anxiety or, you know, any kind of mental health issue?
There are some fantastic charities out there, Calm, Mind. I work with Matt Johnson, and he went through a very troubled time, and Mind really helped him. I think charities like that can do a brilliant job in helping you through the tough time, but then I think it is up to you to continue the good work. The first part for any man, I think, is to be vulnerable enough to understand that they can grow, they can change, and they're not stuck in this place. But it does, that requires a bit of vulnerability.
Do you think that's the hardest step for men? The first bit of saying, actually, I've got a problem.
Yeah, it's definitely a big challenge. Yeah, because you're immediately risking other men judging you and joking with you and, you know, taking the piss out of you. And, you know, that's tough because it's a sensitive area. You know, you try. It's like saying you're not a real man. That kind of space. So it is, yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And that's a big part of my message, is to vulnerability. None of us are perfect. So don't worry if there's something up, because whoever's judging you for not being perfect, they've got something that's not perfect either.
When you took your clothes off, was it because that was the most vulnerable thing you could think of doing? Was it because you had body image issues and therefore, I mean, you know, why that? Because there are lots of different ways of showing vulnerability, aren't there?
There are, yeah. I guess Instagram, having worked in the tech space before, I could see the value of Instagram and how much it was blowing up, and it was a very visual platform. And yes, like, I mean, even Buddhism talks a lot about being naked, you know, stripping yourself, removing the mask, sparing your soul, getting out of your head. You know, it's all... So it was a vulnerable thing for me to do, and it is a vulnerable thing for me to do. But I also felt it had to be something that had to be visual. And that's, you know, that imagery.
It's a very, very strong image, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope so. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, and I fully get that it's not for everyone. Some people won't understand it and won't get it and might look at it and think, you know, what the hell is that guy up to? And that's fine. You know, we can't please everyone. But if I can touch some people and I can draw people in through imagery that strikes them, then that's, you know, it's a good start for me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So you obviously started in tech, and now you have a blog and you've got a really strong social media presence. What's your relationship like with tech personally? Is it something that's completely straightforward and you have no problems with, or are there areas that you'd like to kind of think about?
I think it's definitely a management, something we've got to manage constantly, because our phone is so easy to get an endorphin hit out of. Dopamine hit that we can get from a message or a like and all that. And it gives us a quick buzz of being purposeful with someone's interested in us. But it's very short. And I think Let me give you an example. I went on a retreat in October with 22 people. There were no phones, no newspapers, no reading, no internet, no anything. All we had was to share with our hearts from each other. And day one, you know, everyone was a bit standoffish. Day two, we started to see each other a little bit. Day three, wow, that story is amazing. Day four, God, these people are really special. Day five, we're a family. And we really were so close. We got to see everyone's hearts for 7 days. When I left that, came back to my flat, suddenly I was on my own. And I immediately picked up my phone and sent some messages to people because I was craving connection. Mm. And I got a response. And they just that response was just like, nah, this that just isn't itching the sense that I just felt over those 7 days where I felt so connected to people at a deep level. So I'm fully aware that phones can give you a quick hit, but it's nothing like the same connection you get with where you see people's hearts, you see their emotion, you see them standing and their body language, you can take them in, you can see the emotion in their face. That's entirely different from those messages. So for me, it's managing it. You know, my mobile phone plays a role. My mobile phone is a computer that does amazing things for me. It gives me access to a whole world. It allows me to have presence on socials that can touch multiple people in one space. So it definitely has roles. I have to manage my social media to make sure it inspires me. It doesn't. Mm. I'm not playing a comparison game.
I was going to ask you, are you really careful about who you follow then?
And that's our job. Yeah. You know, we've got to make sure that what we're looking at inspires us. And I think I do that quite. I'm inspired by my socials. I really am. But at the same time, I'm still aware I probably spend too much time on my tech, on my platforms.
How do we, I think, I mean, you've had that experience. Obviously, I have the experience because I take people away on retreats and I do it myself. But there are, you know, the majority of people now do not have that experience of being away from their phone. So how do we convince them? How do we say to them it's really worth doing?
It's hard. It's really, because I only know the value of it by experiencing
it. By doing it,
and I didn't want to do it. Mm. And really, it was much easier not to do it. But I guess I'm a bit more committed to my growth than a lot of other people. So I was willing to go through that. But for the average person, particularly the average person, you know, that their phone is part of their life.
Yeah.
And without knowing what it can be like on the other side to get real, real deep connection, what's the draw? Because and that was my first 30 years, by the way. You know, the first 30 years, I didn't have deep connection with anyone. So I didn't know what the draw was. I don't need connection. I'm not bothered by it. I didn't ever feel it. You know, I had girlfriends and it was basic. You know, they looked nice and we'd hold hands and it was kind of that. But I didn't really know them. I didn't know their heart. So it's really hard. And, you know, so many of the answers to all of this kind of stuff for me lies in education. We need to educate kids at a young age that about social media, that this is not a healthy platform to compare yourself to other people. Try and use it to inspire yourself in areas you're genuinely interested in. We need to educate kids that our mind is a hugely powerful tool. We need to teach them that emotions are important. All these things, because when I got to the age of 30, no one had ever taught me how my mind works. No one had ever told me how to use social media. No one would ever taught me why emotions are important. I literally had not a clue. So
is your blog and your feed aimed at boys as well as men? Do you consciously think about aiming at boys, or I mean, what's your kind of target?
My target is people who are conscious and who are wanting to go through change.
Yeah,
and I guess I can speak men's language because I've been there. But it's anyone who's looking to grow and to understand why they might want to change, or if they've got a slight sense of emptiness, why that might be, and what they could do to move away from that emptiness or feel a bit more fulfilled. Because that really is the journey that I've been on. Mm. It's I've lived a fairly empty life that looked shiny and looked good, but didn't fill me up on the inside at all.
We've kind of got to get those messages there, as you say, before you reach that problem, haven't you? So when they're, you know, boys, got to be telling boys this, and they're all on social media, so.
And no one's taught them otherwise.
No.
And no one's taught them. The biggest thing I had was at school was that, for me, I was taught subconsciously, no one ever, I didn't have a lesson on this, but success was fundamentally working hard at school, getting good grades, getting a degree, getting a job, getting a house, getting a partner, wife, kids, dog, whatever, nice house, bingo, that's it, you've smashed life, that is the dream. And I think the trouble comes when so many men achieve that, and women achieve it, and they think, I've got everything I ever set out to be, why does it feel like this? I feel completely empty and unfulfilled. And it's like, well, That's what you've been told to go for. Unfortunately, society's let you down because that's not the key to success. That's not going to let you feel fulfilled. It's going to tick your boxes and life's going to look good, but it's no guarantee that's going to make you feel good either. And I think that's where a lot of us find ourselves and why no one's not teaching us that at school. I don't know. I mean, it does feed the capitalist system. So not to get into politics and everything, but it does, you know, that if we're not feeling good enough, then we will consume.
Yeah.
So,
and we'll consume anything, won't we? Alcohol, drugs, food, anything that makes us feel better.
Yeah. It makes us feel better in that moment. Yeah. But it doesn't, it's only in a moment. How do we feel the next day when we're sitting on our own without any of that stuff filling us up? How's the relationship with ourselves then?
So the good thing about social media, because obviously I'm very keen to talk about the balanced view, is that now boys and men can find people like you. So even if they come from a school or a home, a family environment where it is, you know, aggressively masculine, and I'm using inverted quotes marks here with my fingers, they can find people with a different message, can't they? Which presumably when you were younger, that was impossible.
No, exactly.
To get out of the area you were in and find someone who was saying, look at life in a different way.
Yeah, I was a product of the environment that I grew in. I didn't have the opportunity really to explore outside of it. So that is, you're totally right. And that's where, you know, I like to think is a positive social media, is that you can explore, you can go searching if you want to.
Yeah.
The question is anyone teaching you that there are these things to explore? You know, are you open-minded enough to think that there could be better, or are you just stuck where you are, knowing what you know, and keep going on that space?
Are there any hashtags that men kind of use? I'm thinking about, you know, with women, we've got the Me Too hashtags, and I mean, there are loads of hashtags for kind of campaigns for women to be able to talk about issues that have affected them. Have you seen similar campaigns online or similar kind of
I haven't, but it's a good
issues.
Idea I should try and create one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
I feel like it's just a bit easier for women now to know where to go for help or to know how to find a community that might be talking about issues that are relevant for them. And I'm thinking, obviously, because I do a lot of talks with boys in school, how do we, you know, and men as well, how do we point them in the direction of where they're going to find that community?
I mean, for me, it's a very difficult one to answer. But for me, what I really hope can happen is there'll be more role models that they'll see.
Yeah.
And they'll see that actually, you know, well, he's emotional. He's able to be that. And he's still a man. Look how popular he is. He's still a great man. So, you know, maybe I can be like that. And you've got the royals doing, you know, Harry and William, I think, setting a brilliant precedent with that and getting footballers on TV to talk about these things and showing their vulnerability. So that's really positive. But it's just scratching the surface at the moment, because I think that's what we need. At the moment, I don't think boys are really seeing any other way. They're not knowing that there is another way. They're just seeing what they see. The more we can have ambassadors, if you like, or more men who are showing up and resonating with these boys in that space, then the boys can grow up thinking, oh, you know, I can be like that. It's not wrong.
Yeah, and they're not watching TV. So however great those campaigns are, and I agree, they are brilliant, some of the things on TV, you know, they're on social media. That's where they are. So that's where we've got to talk to them, via YouTube, via Instagram. Those are the platforms that we've got to talk to.
I guess Netflix documentary. I mean, it feels like there's space for these kind of programs to be aired now, doesn't there? It feels like an appetite to get men talking.
Definitely. I've got three questions that I ask everybody, so I want to ask you. What is the one thing that you'd say to people listening to this podcast, the message, if you could just give them one message about their phone habits that you'd like them to think about, what would your message be?
I think it would be that your phone can be a really positive tool. You know, let's not say when you throw away phones. It can be a really positive tool, but be conscious that your phone is... Try and use it as a device that can help you get more real life connection than a replacement for real life connection.
That's a brilliant soundbite. Yeah. I mean, it is about increasing the stuff that we know really works rather than replacing it, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
And have you got a tip you haven't already shared about getting a good balance? You've said you're kind of consciously thinking about how you use it. Obviously, you've been away on a retreat, but you know, are there other little things you do kind of around the house or at work where you set boundaries or are conscious about your use? Do you have an alarm clock?
No, but that's something I'm really working on, is removing my phone from my bedroom. At the moment, I really like to go to sleep to podcasts and wake up to podcasts. I haven't found that solution yet, because I use my phone for that. It does go on airplane mode, but that feels like a bit of a... When I was on the retreat without a phone, it was lovely sleeping without it.
Mm.
And it's kind of like, right, here we go. But then I quickly slip back into that routine of having a podcast before bed. So what other... Putting my phone on airplane mode is probably the best, so I don't get calls at times, and I switch it off in terms of not getting contacted, because otherwise it's constantly lighting up and constantly giving you those dopamine hits.
And what about when you're kind of one-to-one with people or friends? Do you have, you know, do you have rules about how you use it?
Well, I just don't want my phone around, and there's nothing... I'm speaking from experience here in terms of I don't want to have a conversation with someone who's more interested in their phone.
Yeah.
So my phone is out of the equation. In fact, I don't know where it is now, obviously. You know, it's attention.
It's not
on the
visible.
Matter.
I can tell everyone listening it's not visible. Yeah. Yes.
That's important, really important to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it was one thing I was thinking, which is kind of not these three questions. Obviously, you do a lot of public speaking like I do.
Mm.
I was wondering if you'd like to explain to people how it feels when you're talking to people and they've got their phones out or they're filming you.
I don't mind filming. I don't notice that so much. And I like to give people the benefit of the doubt when they have got their phone that they might be taking notes or something, because I know I use my phone for notes a lot. But yeah, if I know that they're just messaging someone or checking Instagram, if you can see them just scrolling, then you are just, I mean, it's an insult really, isn't it?
And it's also really, I find it really off-putting, because you do that thing when you're one-to-one, you think, oh gosh, am I boring you? Am I not interesting enough?
Oh, totally.
Which obviously I'm not, if they've got their phones out. But.
Yeah, but I think filming can be different, because they might be filming because you're really interesting.
Yeah, and they want to play it back afterwards.
Yeah. But you're right, so it can be off-putting if you know. It's just because for that moment you can go into your head, can't you?
Suddenly
you're like, oh, and then it changes how you're sharing. But yeah, I think mobile phones have the time and a place, but if you're trying to have a conversation with someone, have the conversation. Don't worry about your phone.
And my last question, what have you learned about yourself from your phone and tech habits? How have you seen them change over time, or are there things that have surprised you about how you use your phone?
They're increasing. You know, I'm increasing more and more and more. So there's something to be wary of. Because, you know, sometimes you can see that I've spent 7 hours of the day or of the 24 hours on my phone.
Do you use screen time then? Do you have a look at your stats?
Yeah. But I give myself benefit of the doubt, because I actually do a lot of writing on my phone.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a really useful tool, because a lot of the time I'm writing a book on my phone a lot of the time. So it's just becoming more and more powerful, isn't it? It's everything that... You know, there's always something new that comes in that can do something slightly easier for us. It means we don't have to go somewhere. That definitely. Where does it stop? You know, what's going to happen next? We're not at the end of this. So
only at the beginning.
We're only at the beginning. Yeah. So where it goes from here, I don't know.
Are you happy with how you use your phone at the moment? Are you in a good place?
I am. I'm not in a relationship, which makes life easier, because I don't have anyone to...
Messaging you.
Well, no.
Or to compete with the phone.
I don't to compete with the phone, I meant such. You know, when I'm with friends. But if you're spending a lot of time with someone in a relationship, then, you know, that at the moment I've got 24/7 really to myself.
Yeah.
And so if I'm on my phone, it's not...
So you've got no one saying to you, pay me a bit of attention.
Yeah, can't put your phone down.
Yeah.
And I have that freedom. Because it's a great tool for me to keep improving my life in many ways.
Yeah, I mean it's the podcast is called It's Complicated, because there's no easy answer. I mean that's why I'm talking to so many different people. We're all kind of finding our way through this. You know, we've only had smartphones for what, 12, 15 years. So
what are some of the best answers on that stuff? Can you?
Some people say that they've been a bit kind of disappointed about how reliant they are on their phone.
Yeah.
And they've noticed escaping. That's a bit of a theme. People escaping and behind a screen when things become a bit more difficult. And actually, you know, it's really relevant to what we're talking about with being authentic and vulnerable. I was thinking quite recently, if I'd had a smartphone when I was 14 or 15, there is no doubt in all those really difficult social situations, I would have been diving into my phone, because it would have been easier than meeting people, talking to them, you know, particularly at that age where you're kind of not sure who you are. So I think phones as escape mode a lot of people say that they do that more than they'd like to be doing.
It is an escape, isn't it? Absolutely. And it allows us to hide significantly.
Yeah.
Like I said, when I came back on that retreat, having had such wonderful connections with people, I went to my phone. You know, that was where I was looking for connection. And I was able to establish that it wasn't anywhere near as powerful as the real life connections. And so that was a really interesting wake up call for me there. Our phones will never, ever replace real life connection.
That is the perfect place to stop, I think. Thanks for chatting to me.
Thank you.
To follow Ben on Instagram and Twitter, it's The Naked Professor.
The Naked Professor. Twitter's shorter than Naked Profess because there's not enough space.
Okay. and do subscribe to his podcast, chart-topping podcast, The Naked Professors, which is really excellent.
Thank you very much.
So thank you.
Oh, it's lovely to chat with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.